and welcome back to Are You From That Show, the podcast brought to you by Jordan and Hattie. So here we are for season 3 of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening and for tuning in. We're really, really excited to be bringing you this third season full of our amazing guests and conversations. So if you don't already, please do subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen, so that when new episodes are released, you will get them straight away. So without further ado, here we are with season 3, episode 1, and today's wonderful guest, Mara Wilson. Today's guest is the legendary Mara Wilson, who started her acting career as a child, starring in such films as Mrs. Doubtfire alongside Robin Williams, Miracle on 34th Street with Richard Attenborough, and perhaps most iconically as Matilda in, well, Matilda, starring alongside Danny DeVito, who also directed the movie. Mara is now a successful writer and a mental health campaigner, and we're absolutely thrilled to have her on the podcast. Hello, Mara.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This is exciting.
This is super exciting for me as well.
I think I'm most excited.
I actually got the script from Madeline.
When I was, I think, about 9 or 10. And I remember thinking, like, there's no way I can do this because they need to have somebody British or European playing this role. And I'm not a redhead. And I don't know if I could spend this much time in France. And then so I paid particular attention to it when it came out.
And, oh, my God, I never knew that.
But I remember seeing all the cute little like interviews with you on Nickelodeon and being like, oh, that's who got that part. Okay, yeah, she seems better suited to it than me. Yeah.
That's amazing. So that must have been a really similar time then to when you filmed Matilda.
Yeah, that was right after Matilda. I think I was in 4th or 5th grade, so I was 9 or 10. And I was also just kind of like, do I really want to play another? Like, I loved the Madeline books. I loved them so much. But I was like, is it even fair for me to play two of my favorite characters? I didn't think I was well suited to it. And obviously they chose somebody else. But yeah.
Do you know what I was saying to Jordan before we came on the call? I was just saying that I feel like you have actually been on a lot of my Madeline journey with me.
Really?
Because the Matilda movie came out, I think it was really similar time to when Madeline came out, maybe slightly before.
I think like a year before.
Yeah, but I have spent and still do a lot of my life, when people talk about me, they go, oh, she was the girl from Matilda. I mean, she was the girl from Madeline.
That happens to me too. Yeah, that happens to me too. I went to a summer camp once and there was like a mean older boy who called me Madeline. And then people were like, she wasn't Madeline, she was Matilda. And he's like, oh, whatever, they're both annoying little girls. I was like, come on, dude. Yeah, he wasn't very nice. People will sometimes still say like, oh yeah, you were in Madeline, right? No, I mean Matilda. Yeah, that happens a lot.
I can't believe that happens to you as well. That's crazy.
Yeah, it does.
So I guess, I mean, I listened to your amazing book that you wrote recently. And I know very well how you got into it, but would you briefly mind describing to some of our listeners who may not know, I guess, how you started acting and what your first professional job was?
Yeah, so the thing about growing up where I did was that child acting was actually pretty common. You know, it was like, I mean, it was like, you know, playing rugby or playing, you know, softball or something like that, where Girl Scouts, Girl Guides, things like that, where it was kind of like a more common thing because all of our parents worked for the studios. My father worked for, he worked for a local news station, and we had all of the studios near us. So my family was at a toothpaste commercial because they were looking for like normal families to be in a toothpaste commercial. And I didn't even know this until I was much older. But I was the baby in it. That was actually my first commercial. I had no idea that I was in that until I was probably about 20, 21. But Yeah, but my first, but after that, one of my oldest brother, I have three brothers, my oldest brother started doing a little bit of acting too. He was in some commercials. He was in the movie Turner and Hooch with Tom Hanks.
Yes.
He was in a Police Academy movie. He had tiny bit parts in things here and there. And he was kind of getting tired of it. He wanted to do something else. And I saw what he was doing, and I was a very performative kid. I loved singing and dancing and making up stories. Like, making up stories was the big thing. I would make up stories and I would act them out and tell everybody my stories. It got to the point where I would tell these like really long winding stories. And so I would just say like, I have a story. Once upon a time, and my brothers would start clapping and go, oh, good story, because otherwise I'd go on all night. But I loved performing. So I kind of put two and two together and realized like what my brother was doing was kind of like me performing, except people wanted to see you perform. And so I told him, I told my mom, I was like, I want to do what he does. And she said, no, you don't. And she actually tried to talk me out of it. She put me through mock auditions. And I eventually was like, nope, I like this too much. I'm going to keep doing it. So I went on auditions. I can't remember what the first audition I went for was, but I do remember being like a little nervous about, you know, I'd had like an anxious day or something. And this one boy that my mom knew came in with me for my first audition because I was so nervous. And then after a while I got one for Oscar Mayer Lunchables. And I don't know if you have them in the UK. They're like these prepackaged lunches where they have like crackers and cheese.
They sound like Gary Lee.
Yes,
they are from Gary Lee, maybe. Yeah.
And you put them together.
Yes, you put them together, and there's ones that look like little pizzas and things
like
that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, Dairy Lee. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard of Dairy Lee cheese, but I haven't heard of it's like that. And so I was in a commercial for that, and then I was in a commercial for Texaco, you know, the gas company, and I think Bank of America, and a bunch of different commercials, and then finally there was this big open call for a movie called Mrs. Doubtfire. And my mom was like, oh, I don't think she should do it. I don't think she should do it. And my agent was like, no, just go see what happens. She's not going to get it. It'll just be good practice for her. And I went there and they called me back and they called me back again and they called me back again. And eventually I flew up to San Francisco to do a screen test with a bunch of different kids to see if we could like be like a family. And I met Lisa Jacob and Matthew Lawrence, and we all immediately got along. We all loved each other. We all were like, no, we feel like a family. We had immediate chemistry. And I remember thinking to myself, I really, really hope that I get this, but I also hope that they do too. And that's what happened. And things just kind of snowballed from there, because Mrs. Doubtfire was a huge hit and I hadn't anticipated that, but it was a fun experience. Everybody working on it was lovely. And from there, my mom was like, do you want to keep acting? And I said, yes. And then, I mean, we never, you know, I don't think I was an ambitious kid. I think I had no idea what I was getting myself into. And I really, I sincerely believe that my parents would not have let me do it if they had known that the films I was in were going to be successful. So, and then eventually that we were getting a bunch of scripts, and my mom said, and my agent told my mom, she's like, we got this script, Matilda, this script. And my mom was like, whoa, Matilda, send us that one. Because we loved Matilda. We loved the book. My mom actually used to read it out loud to the students at my brother's school, because she had a very good narrator voice. And so she would act out all the parts. And one of my earliest memories actually is she couldn't find a babysitter for me. I had a cold or something. And she just kind of bundled me up in blankets and put me in the back of the class while she read out loud to my brothers.
Oh, that's amazing.
Matilda. Yeah. And that's one of my earliest memories. And I still think about that all the time.
I will say one thing, I'm listening to your book. Your mom sounds like an amazing, amazing woman. And also in terms of keeping you grounded and keeping your feet firmly on the floor with all the amazing movies you were doing.
Yes. Thank you. I really do feel like she was a very strong woman. She had a very strong presence, and she, I think, was very good. Like, she never would have called herself a manager, but she basically was. And she also said, you know, you're going to remain normal. You're going to share a bedroom with your sister. You're going to keep going to public schools, you know, to the state schools. You're going to live a normal life. And And I did. And the thing was, there were enough kids in my town that were also going out on auditions and things that it was kind of normal for us. And it wasn't as big of a deal. And so it would sort of just be like, oh, Vanessa takes dance classes and Ashley plays softball and Mara goes on auditions.
Yeah.
So that became a thing. And I'm kind of glad I had that community. I do think definitely it got harder as I got older, and especially after my mother died and my father had to balance a full-time job, raising five children, being a widower, and my career. Like, that was obviously incredibly hard for my father, but I do feel like they really did the best they could. And I'm very happy that they were like that.
Yeah.
It's amazing because, the difference between like US child actors and UK child actors,
mm-hmm.
seems completely different, especially with you being in, you know, growing up in California, where
yeah.
it being so regular and being so normal, whereas a lot of people that we've spoken to that were child actors in England, they were mm-hmm. they were one in a sea of people who did normal things, and they were the special one or the one that was singled out because they were the only one amongst their friends that would be going to auditions, and it was so weird and alien for them.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you do hear a lot of, like, some child actors in the UK. I mean, a lot of child actors in the US, in mostly in California and New York, have parents that were actors too.
Yeah.
And I feel like you see that sometimes in the UK, but it does seem sort of like they're kind of plucked out of obscurity. And that, I mean, I you see that, and then they kind of go on and they have these huge careers, and I know that I do feel like a lot more people in the UK want, it seems like they want more like inexperienced actors. Mm-hmm. At least that's kind of been, you know, like they want people who aren't, you know, who don't, they want like normal kids. But yeah. I mean, I also feel like that's kind of a standard in a lot of, like, I watch a lot of British TV and movies, and it does feel like people look a bit more normal there. Like, it's not all cosmetic surgery. You know, people in the US, like, there's like a certain standard that you have to look like, and there's a certain thing that you have to do. And I know so many actors in the US who are like, it's so much different in the UK. It's so more real there.
Yeah. Totally. I think it really is, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, in terms of like what you're expected to look like, even like as a woman, you know?
Yeah, that's something too, because like I mean, there are a lot of reasons that I don't do screen acting anymore, but one of them is there's a ridiculous standard, you know, there's a ridiculous standard for looks. And like, so it doesn't matter if like I think I'm cute and like my friends think I'm cute and like people I date think I'm cute, like people will even be like, well, I think you're attractive. And I'm like, well, thanks, and I appreciate that. But it's not about that. It's about these, you know, ridiculous standards. But I mean, I watch a show, I watch a British show, and I'm like, oh, you know, I bet if I were in the UK, I could have been in one episode, you know, love interest on Peep Show, you know, I could have done that. It's a bit more real there, I think. And it's interesting to me that like a lot of the actors there that have gotten really big, you know, people, I'm thinking like Dev Patel and you know Daniel Kaluuya and people like that, like we're just like normal kids.
Yeah
I
think a lot of people that we've spoken to have said that same thing, that often in the auditions they were chosen because they were just normal.
Yeah, that's definitely something. I mean, that is something that you see, like you can tell sort of which like there's definitely something, and especially in film, they want kids that seem normal and they want kids that seem sincere. I do think that is still a thing in the US. I think that a lot of kids have sort of a natural theatricality, mm-hmm. and you know, can be very over the top. And I look at them and I'm like, unfortunately, they're probably not going to be chosen because they want people that are more real, and they might, you know, they might find a place for themselves in like some different kinds of theater and things like that. But a lot of times they want people who can bring, you know, the realness to the role. And that's, and actors, you know, I feel like so many actors have like an obsession with being real and being authentic. But yeah, I mean, I definitely think that is a thing for here as well. But I also think that we have unrealistic standards with looks and with acting and stuff. And I think that we like artifice a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what was it like though? I mean, like, I mean, like, you're 6, 7, 8 years old.
Yeah.
What is it like being on a film set? I mean, because I know for me, it never really felt like acting. It felt like I was just sort of, it wasn't a job or anything like that. It was just kind of like, you know, you're saying lines and you're standing where you're told and you smile and that sort of thing. It was like, you know, but what was it like for you?
I mean, I would say it felt like that too. And there were times that it didn't really feel like acting because it was so separate. So separate. And I remember like loving the big emotional scenes because they felt really, you know, they felt like really exciting and interesting, you know? Yeah. And I loved being able to cry. Like, did you guys know how to cry like on cue basically?
I can't even
cry now. Like, let alone when I was 7 years old, I can't cry now on cue. I mean, I'm emotionless.
Oh, I mean, no. I mean, it's, I don't think I could do it now, but like as a kid, I could cry on cue. Wow. But people were always saying to me, they were like, oh, did you use that to get out of trouble? And I'm like, no, because that would be a lie. And I wasn't a liar. I was an actor. Mm. So those two things felt very different for me. Yeah. But I do remember like being in the girls' bathroom at school and people being like, can we see you cry? And I was like, yeah, okay. And I like just centered myself and got in this place. And I like started crying and people were like, she's crying real tears. And it wasn't real, but it was, you know, it was acting. But I never faked it. Like I knew, you know, I knew my mom too well. I knew I couldn't lie to her. And that was something that I always found interesting too, is like acting was never, you know, it was kind of like people used to say like acting's not pretending. And I'm like, well, I guess in some ways it is, but it's using your imagination, it's feeling it, but it's a much more like meditative make-believe, but it's not lying, you know, lying is very different, I think. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I liked being on sets. I did. I liked the camaraderie of it. I liked what I call the rolling chorus, which mm-hmm. is, you know, all the things they say when they're rolling.
Action, sound.
Action, yeah. Yeah, yes, exactly. So rolling speed, you know, background marker action. Yeah. I used to say that like just like the sort of the rise and fall of it. It sounds like it's like a song or a chant.
Yeah.
And it's something you get used to. And I used to do like my own impression of it. So yeah, the rolling chorus is something that's like it's very familiar to me.
It's like a constant. It's kind of reassuring, isn't it?
It is. It really is. And I've talked to some other people who like grew up on film sets and have been like, that's reassuring to you, isn't it? And it's like, yeah, it's like a lullaby or something. I also still love the smell of construction. Like, because people were always building sets. So it's like the smell of plywood, you know, these kinds of things. It's like that takes me back. That takes
makes
me back
you feel to at home.
Exactly. So it's kind of strange. I mean, I feel like as I got older, I found film sets very tedious. I was like, this is boring. I don't want to be here. I want to be with my friends. I want to be reading. I want to be, you know, going online. And I mean, I think you feel kind of like that when you're a preteen or teenager anyway. I mean, you don't want to be told what to do anymore. And what are you doing on film sets? You're just being told what to do.
Yeah.
So.
But what age is that where you were like, you started to find them a bit tedious?
I think probably like 11, 12, I was like, this is boring, you know, maybe yeah. like I remember filming a Disney movie, like a TV Disney movie with a couple of friends when I was like 10 and Rudy and Adam, the actors that were on it with me, I had such a good time with. They were like, we were such close friends. And I remember like being annoyed when we had to do shots because I just wanted to keep talking and playing with them.
Yeah.
And so I think that was probably kind of the beginning of it. But yeah, and by 11 and 12, I was like very checked out. And I was, you know, I was a moody preteen and I was going through my own stuff the way that like a lot of kids do at that age. And it was a lot of times my mom wasn't there. You know, my mom had died. So a lot of times, you know, I felt kind of like I was on my own. Sometimes my dad was there and sometimes I was like there with nannies and stuff. Like, mm-hmm. it's still kind of weird to me. Now I think about this and I'm like, oh, I like lived abroad with no family members when yeah. I was a child. Like yeah. I went to different countries. I basically lived in Canada for, you know, a month or two, by myself with no family members. We had nannies there when I was 12. Yeah. And I'm like, I mean, yes, it's Canada. It's next door to the U.S., but it's still you're 3,000 miles away without your family.
Yeah.
And that kind of warps my brain sometimes. And like I remember my college boyfriend came back from studying abroad in London, And he was just like, I know everything about London now. I know all these things. And I was just like, I like basically studied abroad in the UK when I was 11, 12. Like don't try to like mansplain. Like,
you met the Queen in London.
I did meet the Queen. Like, I was like, stop trying to explain like London culture to me. I was like, I know it better than you do. I know actual UK stuff. Okay. I was in the Isle of Man when I was 12, you know, like I know the more obscure stuff. That stuff was very cool though. And I mean, I think that was some of the best parts of acting for sure was getting to travel, because I came from like a lower middle class family and we didn't really have, you know, we didn't have a lot of money to travel. Like sometimes we would do a family reunion and we would like pool money together and to be able to go to like the North Midwest, like Minnesota, Chicago, places like that where our family was from. But usually it was like we went camping. If we went on trips, we went on car trips, we went camping. Yeah. It was not, and we had five children, so things would have been very, very expensive. So traveling was one of the best parts of acting for me, I think.
And I guess also being able to take your siblings on some of those trips with you, maybe? Did people? Yeah, yeah.
That's definitely great. I mean, I remember it's funny seeing like what my older brothers remember and what my little sister remembers. Like we got to go to Spain and like my brother was taking a Spanish class and he had a crush on one of the translators from Fox there. And he says he learned how to speak Spanish in like 2 days because he had a crush on one of the translators and she helped him with his Spanish. And like my sister like traveled a lot with us everywhere too. And there's like I have a photo of her, I think, in the Isle of Man, like framed. And there was, I remember she was like, there was one place we went that we just loved. She was like, I loved it so much. I thought that place was so cool. I want to go back there. And I went through like a long list of places that we went. I was like, was it Tokyo? Was it London? Was it, you know, was it Toronto? Was it Mexico? Like I went through this long list and finally she was like, no, I think it's where we, she was like, there were really dark curtains. I remember like it was sunny in the winter. And I was like, Glasgow? Was it Glasgow? And she was like, yeah, I loved Glasgow. I want to go back to Glasgow. And I was like, Glaswegians would be very happy to hear you say that.
Yeah.
Because I think they get kind of a bad rap sometimes. Like Americans that have been to Scotland love to talk about Edinburgh, but Glasgow doesn't get enough love. So that was fun. I got to be on a TV show where I played I played games with like Mel C from the Spice Girls.
Oh my God. I know, right? Spice Girls fan. I guess you must have been as well, I guess, that age.
Yeah. Well, at the time I was trying to pretend that I wasn't because I thought that my brothers would judge me. But no, I love them. Of course I love them. I love them now. I listen to them all the time. And I love Mel C's like solo stuff too. So like I remember she asked me, she's like, oh, do you listen to my music? And I like totally did, but I had to like pretend. You know? It's funny now because I remember my like, you know, one of my brothers will be like, yeah, I like the Spice Girls. We all like the Spice Girls. Everybody liked the Spice Girls. So I know I loved the Spice Girls. So yeah, that was very exciting.
I was saying to Jordan actually last week, I got to meet the Spice Girls on Letterman when I was in Madeline. Yeah, I think they knew that I was a huge fan and so kind of arranged it so I was on the show the same night as them.
That's amazing.
And I couldn't speak and it was being filmed live. I think it was live at the time or maybe slightly pre-recorded.
I had a similar thing. I met Gwen Stefani when I was 10 and I was a big No Doubt fan and I remember like not even knowing what to do. And yeah, and they arranged for me to meet her too. I was so excited.
Yes, for everyone else back behind the scenes, it's probably super exciting. You're going to get this little kid and they're going to meet their idol. But then when you're the little kid, it's like, it's actually so scary, but in a fun way.
Yeah, I was so nervous and they were like, don't be afraid of her. And I was like, I know, but I'm just so nervous. And she was like, oh yeah, I've seen Matilda. And she turned to Tony in the band and she was like, hey Tony, look, it's Matilda. And he was like, oh yeah, it was really cool. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about Matilda and about playing a role that so many people know from the book and have their own kind of relationship with and how that journey's been for you. I read somewhere that you described her kind of like a big sister.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I I've sort of struggled with my relationship with Matilda for a long time because it always felt sort of like, and I don't know if you felt like this too, but like, it felt like people wanted the character and not me. So it felt a little bit like living in her shadow. And Matilda was much cooler than me, I thought, and she was smarter than me. And in some ways, I think I benefited from that because people are like, oh, you must be like really smart because you played Matilda. And I'm like, I would like to think so, but I'm nowhere near as smart as her, obviously. Yeah. I don't have telekinetic powers. And people would call me Matilda for a long time. And so, and I felt annoyed. And I felt, I kind of had like imposter syndrome where I was like, I don't deserve this. I don't deserve to be playing her, you know? And at the time when I was playing her, I think I felt very confident. I was at like at a confident point in my life. I had that sort of like 7-8-year-old energy of like, I can do this, you know, this is great. I'm going to do this. And then as I got older, I was like, oh no, I'm insecure now. but I think that I kind of reconciled, like even in like into my 20s, it was very frustrating for me because I was just like, everybody knows her. Nobody knows me. Everybody likes her. Nobody cares about me. And I felt like I had to sort of reconcile it and remember like what she actually meant to me because I knew what she meant to everybody else. But I didn't know what she meant to me anymore. So I kind of had to go back and think about my relationship with her. And I remember in college being frustrated with being called Matilda. And my favorite teacher said, you should write a letter to Matilda. And I did. And it's in the book.
And that's, I was going to say, that's chapter 9, I think it is, in your book. Yeah.
Yeah. It really helped, you know. And it was actually one of the hardest things to write in the book. And I remember working with my editor giving me copious notes. I went through many, many, many drafts. Some of the other parts of my book were just kind of like, you know, sprang out of my head, fully formed like Athena. But that was a hard one to write because I just had so much feelings where I was like, I love this character so much and I love what she did for me, but I also feel jealous of her, even though she's not a real person. And I just feel like, you know, I felt so many complicated things about this, you know, fictional little girl that I'm going to be tied with for the rest of my life and the pressure to live up to her. But also like that she's inspired me and so that was a very hard piece for me to write, but I'm so glad that I did. I felt like that really kind of was a, what's the word, like cathartic thing for me, I guess. Like it was really good for me to do that, I think. And now like when people call me Matilda, I'll just smile, you know, and I take it as a compliment. And I have to remind myself, like, you mean something to so many different girls and so many different kids, you know, of whatever gender, like all over the world, you know, and that's something that I have to remember. And that's something that I'm extremely grateful for.
Yeah.
But it took me a long time to get there.
I think that's something that actually a lot of people that we've spoken to, and I don't know, Hattie, whether you feel the same with that, with Madeline, that it takes a long time to kind of accept what you did and the role that you played. And because obviously you're young, you're a kid, and you're not able to process all those thoughts and emotions and feelings, and you're going through, you know, being a teenager and after that and whatnot. And a lot of people probably spent a lot of their like early 20s, mid 20s, who are child actors, trying to figure out what went on and why they felt so much bitterness or resentment sometimes, and kind of just going, why was that? It's kind of a weird relationship that you kind of isn't. But I think when I read parts of your book, I was like, it was amazing how honest you were with how you like kind of reflected upon it now.
Yeah.
And I think listening to it, it made a lot of sense listening to other child acts and how they felt. I was like, that's the way they feel, the way you really like spelt it out. It's, very nicely.
I always love meeting other child actors because we have such weird, obscure things that have happened to us and like to nobody else.
Yeah.
You know, I always love that because it's like, oh, you understand.
Yeah. It's like a strange club.
It is. It's a very strange club. And it always feels, we have the same kind of weird memories, I feel like. And it's funny because like, no matter where I've met people from, you know, from South Africa, I've met people from Asia, I've met people from like all over the world who are child actors. And I feel like we all have it's such a unique experience, but for us, it wasn't. It's just like, oh yeah, that happened to you too. Oh yeah, that happened to me. And
yeah,
and it's nice. It's a world that and I do feel incredibly lucky. I also feel lucky on a practical level because I mean, I don't know if I would have been able to you know, pay for like the boarding school that I went to and my college education, you know, and things like that without the money that I made making these movies, you know. Yeah. I don't know if I, and I definitely wouldn't have the opportunity, and it definitely got my foot in the door as a writer, like, oh, she might have some interesting things to say. Yeah. She might have, you know, because she's had a really interesting experience. Mm-hmm. So I feel very lucky for the opportunities I've had. And yeah, I never would have been able to go to Madrid and Tokyo and, you know, and London and Glasgow as a child, you know, I never would have been able to do all of these things and meet the wonderful people that became like second family to me, like Danny DeVito and Rhea Perlman and, you know, and Robin Williams and Sally Field and M. Beth Davids and Pam Ferris and Michael Ritchie and like all of these wonderful people.
Wow.
That I worked with.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never would have been able to. Like, I still, Hattie, I can't believe that you worked with Frances McDormand, who...
I know. I can't believe I worked with Frances.
my, actually, I always thought that, like, if there were a movie about my life, Frances McDormand could play my mom.
Oh, she, yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds like a great casting from having read your book.
Yeah, yeah. My mom looked and sounded a lot like Frances McDormand. And she always reminded me of my mom. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to just bring it back to your writing today, because actually it sounds like writing has kind of, and telling stories has always been a part of your life.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Even from a child, as you said, kind of putting on shows for your family.
Yeah.
So definitely. It actually feels kind of like quite fitting that that's now what you are doing.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because the most of the work I do now, I still act sometimes, but it's all voiceover. Mm-hmm. And I've especially, like, the past few years, I've really wanted to do more audiobooks. Mm-hmm. Like, when I recorded my book, I was like, oh my gosh, there's something here that just clicks. There's something here that I just love about this. And I was supposed to get it done in a week, and I got it done in, like, 3 days. And it just felt so, I was just like, I love doing this. And they were like, yeah, you're pretty good at this.
You're really good at it, Mara. I listened to the whole thing. It was amazingly read, yeah.
And, like, I don't think I'm the best actor, but I do. I'm like, maybe I am a good narrator. And that's so funny, because that's, like, what my mom was. I mean, nobody paid her to do it, but she would always read books out loud to the class and, you know, as like a volunteer parent, you know, with a PTA and everything. And I'm like, oh, that's so funny, because that's just totally something that my mom did. And the telling stories, I always wanted to tell stories. I always wanted to make up stories. And it's funny because, like, I feel like I see this in my family too. Like, all of us had like things that we were very interested in as children that we ended up doing as adults. Like, my sister was the type of person who would like make amazing, beautiful color patterns out of blocks or Play-Doh or, you know, clay or things like that as a child. And now she's a visual artist.
Oh, wow. And, okay.
Yeah. And like, one of my brothers was like obsessed with dinosaurs and dinosaur bones when he was young. And now he teaches paleontology. And it's kind of like, yeah. So it's, and my thing was that I found the narrative in everything and I made up stories. So, and I also think that being on a film set kind of helps things too, because I was always listening in on people's conversations, especially adults' conversations. And so I would pick up words from them. And I also just read so many scripts. So, like, I would try to write, like, fiction stories and, like, novels and stuff when I was in college. And I would try to write short stories. And I always found it kind of difficult. And then I took a playwriting class. And immediately my teacher was like, oh, you have an ear for dialogue.
Mm.
And I was like, well, that's probably because I spent most of my childhood listening, listening to adults, but also memorizing dialogue. Yeah. So I know what it sounds like. And yeah, so playwriting and like writing character lines and stuff is still very, it feels the most natural to me, because that's what I did as a child.
That totally makes sense, actually.
Yeah.
Spending your life learning lines, writing lines is going to come more easily. It's, you know what they're meant to sound like, what good dialogue sounds like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I thought about it, and a lot of the best, like, in my opinion, a lot of the best playwrights started as actors.
Mm-hmm.
like Tracy Letts is one, Sam Shepard, you know, they were actors, and then they became playwrights. And so they kind of knew it from the actor side as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really cool, and that's really important. So that, you know, there is that connection there. Also, I think that writers need to think about actors because yeah. sometimes they yeah. don't. Like, I like one thing that drives me crazy is I always hated the way that, like, I didn't like the way that children were misrepresented in movies and in scripts. I would read it and I would be like, that doesn't make any sense.
Mm.
This child is 8 and like doesn't, you know, this child is 8 and is, you know, or what was it? It was like, there was a 5-year-old in a script that I read that was working on multiplication. And I was yeah, like, that seems a little advanced,
yeah.
you know, or there, yeah. Or there'd be like a 10-year-old who was like picking her nose in public and I was just like, that's not usually something a 10-year-old would do, yeah. you know? And like, there would just be like different things in there where I would be like, or they would like have a girl who just like made fart jokes all the time. And I'm like, some girls are like this, but not all of them. Like, they're not all like, they were very clearly just writing what they thought a boy character was like.
Right.
And that was something that I feel like, and a lot of other child actors, I feel like can, they'll be like, oh yeah, a lot of adults, they kind of forget what it's like to be a child.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that a lot of child actors, we kind of can't forget
yeah.
because it was so eventful. So people will be like, I don't know what I was doing when I was 6. And I'm like, well, I did because it was interesting because it was memorable, you know?
Yeah.
You remember everything. Like,
I mean, I have no idea where my keys are, but I have, and that's the thing. Like, I remember like the exact words that people said from years and years ago, but I have like no idea where anything is in my apartment or something, you know, things like that. So, I mean, I feel like I have a lot of memories of being a child just because a lot of them were interesting, and I got to do cool things, you know. I got to go to like fun parties, and like, I remember like running out onto a dance floor and like looking up into someone's face and it was George Lucas.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Things like that. I have so many like weird little memories like that. And it's funny because like my life now is pretty boring, but every now and then I'll be like, oh yeah,
yeah,
that did happen. It was hard sometimes to go back to my normal life. Like, my parents really wanted me to live a normal life, but it could be really hard because it was like, especially since I had very protective parents. So it went from being like, you are the, you know, you are a very important person on this set and you're traveling around the world. And then I got back and my dad would be like, but you're not allowed to cross the street by yourself.
Yeah. Or clean your room.
Exactly. It's very much like I'd come home from some big, you know, like publicity trip. And it was like, okay, go do the dishes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the best way to be, though.
Yeah, I do think that that's good. I think that it's hard for kids, but like the way that people always ask me, they're like, would you put your kids in child acting or what do you think is a good way to do it? And I'm always like, I think probably the best thing to do if your child does want to act, first of all, make sure it's their choice, make sure that they want to, but also have them do like one or two things and then do something else for a while. Because I think that they should learn to do other things, that they should, you know, they should develop other hobbies. A lot of child actors I know had other creative hobbies as well. So they would be actors, but they would also play the drums or they would also, you know, they would write songs, or they would be painters, or they would be, you know, they would be creative in some way. And so I think that that's really cool. And I think, you know, they should go to school, they should get an education, you know, they should learn practical things as well. And that, I think, is the best thing. Like, I think it's, I don't know, I feel like there should be child actors, but not child stars, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that does.
Yeah, I don't know how to accomplish that, but that's really what, and my mom would always tell me, she's like, you're not a star, the only stars are in the sky. So every now and then people, yeah, I still feel like I can't call myself a child star because that seems so self-aggrandizing. And who's to say what a star is? And it's a silly term. But yeah, there shouldn't be child stars, but there can be child actors.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way that I see it.
Well, Mara, I think we're going to have to wrap that up.
Yes. So
thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me talk. As you can tell, I'm a talker.
Thank you so much, Mara, for coming on the podcast. And thanks for listening. And thank you to George for providing the music. You can find him at soundcloud.com/George. That's J-A-U-G-E. Tune in next time. See you later.